back, holding onto this acoustic guitar like a lifeline. He settles onto the floor to tune it, his back against the side of the couch. A couple of people glance over at him without breaking their conversations. It's weird, because pretty much everyone looks familiar, but it's all soccer people and other miscellaneous jocks. Which is fine, obviously. It's just that I don't really know them. It's pretty clear that I won't be seeing Cal Price in this crowd. And I don't know where the heck Martin is. I sit, and Leah slides down the wall next to me, leaning against it with her legs tucked awkwardly to the side. She's wearing a skirt with her costume, and I can tell she's trying to keep her thighs from showing, which is so ridiculous and so Leah. I scoot close to her, and she smiles a little bit without looking at me. Abby settles in cross-legged facing us, and it's really kind of nice. We basically have our own corner of the room. I feel kind of happy and hazy now, and beer doesn't taste so bad after the first few sips. Garrett or someone must have turned the stereo off, and a couple of people have come over to listen to Nick. I don't know if I mentioned this, but Nick has the most raspy, perfect singing voice in the world. Of course, he has this weird, dad-like obsession with classic rock, but I guess that's not always a bad thing. Because right now he's singing Pink Floyd's Wish You Were Here, and I'm thinking about Blue, and I'm thinking about Cal Price. Here's the thing. I have this feeling in my gut that Blue is Cal Price. I just do. I think it's the eyes. He has ocean eyes, just waves and waves of blue-green. And sometimes when I look at Cal, I feel like we understand each other, and he gets it. And it's perfect and unspoken. "Simon, how much did you drink?" asks Leah. I'm twisting the ends of her hair. Leah's hair is so pretty, and it smells exactly like French toast. Except that's Abby. Leah smells like almonds. "One beer?" "One most excellent, most delicious beer." "One beer?" I can't even begin to express how ridiculous you are. But she's almost smiling. "Leah, did you know you have a really Irish face?" She looks at me. "What?" "You guys know what I mean. Like an Irish face. Are you Irish?" Not as far as I know." Abby laughs. "My ancestors are Scottish," someone says. I look up, and it's Martin Addison wearing bunny ears. "Yeah, exactly," I say as Martin sits beside Abby. Close, but not too close. "Okay. And it's so weird, right? Because we all have these ancestors from all over the world. And here we are in Garrett's living room, and Martin's ancestors are from Scotland. And I'm sorry, but Leah's are totally from Ireland." "If you say so." "And Nick's are from Israel." "Israel?" says Nick, fingers still sliding all over the frets of the guitar. "They're from Russia." "So I guess you learn something new every day, because I really thought Jewish people came from Israel." "Okay, well, I'm English and German, and Abby's, you know..." Oh God, I don't know anything about Africa, and I don't know if that makes me racist. "West African, I think." "Exactly. I mean, it's just the randomness of it. How did we all end up here?" "Slavery, in my case," Abby says. And fucking fuck. I need to shut up. I needed to shut up about 5 minutes ago. The stereo kicks back in again. "Hey, I think I'm going to grab a drink," Martin says, jumping up again in that spastic Martin way. "Can I get you all anything?" "Thanks, but I'm driving," says Leah. But she wouldn't be drinking even if she wasn't driving. I know that. Because there's this invisible line. And on one side are people like Garrett and Abby and Nick and every musician ever. People who go to parties and drink and don't get wasted off of one beer. People who have had sex and don't think it's a huge deal. On the other side of the line are people like Leah and me. But the one thing that makes it weirdly better is knowing that Blue is one of us. I'm reading a little between the lines here, but I actually don't think Blue has ever kissed anyone. It's funny. I don't even know if it counts that I have. I've never kissed a guy. That's something I think about all the time. "Spear?" asks Martin. "Sorry, what?" "Anything to drink?" Oh, thanks. I'm good. Leah makes this little noise like a snort. I'm done too. Thanks, though. Abby kicks her foot against my foot. At home, I just take the metro and sneak in through our back door, so it didn't matter. When Abby says home, she's still talking about D.C. But I figure Simon's parents don't need to see me drunk. I don't think they would care. Abby pushes her bangs to the side and looks up at me. I think you'd be surprised. They let my sister pierce her ear a million times. Wow, Nora's such a badass, says Leah. Okay, Nora's the opposite of a badass, I shake my head. I am such a badder ass than Nora. And don't let anyone tell you otherwise, says Martin, settling back in beside Abby with a beer in hand. Abby stretches and pulls herself up, resting her hand on my hood. Come on, people are dancing. Good for people, says Nick. We are dancing. Abby extends both arms toward him. No. Buddy puts the guitar down and lets her pull him up. But have you seen my sweet moves? Asks Martin. Let's see them. He does this weird rhythmic pantomime of swimming, followed by this side-to-side shoulder-lurch-butt-scoot combo. Yeah, you're awesome, Abby says. Come on. She tugs his hands, and he springs up, beaming. Then she guides her little harem to this carpeted area near the stereo, where people are drinking and grinding to Kanye. Except Abby kind of goes into her own world when she dances, so Nick and Martin end up bobbing self-consciously and pointedly not looking at each other. Oh my God, says Leah. It's happening. We're finally witnessing something more painful than Nick's bar mitzvah. Awkwardness achievement unlocked. Should we be filming this? Just savor it. I hook my arm around her shoulders, pulling her in closer. And Leah's weird about hugs sometimes, but today she buries her face in my shoulder and murmurs something into the fabric of my robes. What? I nudge her. But she just shakes her head and sighs. Leah drops us all off at Nick's at midnight, and from there it's a 7-minute walk to my house. The indoor lights are off everywhere, but the neighborhood is still lit up orange. There are a few smashed pumpkins and lots of toilet paper tangled through branches. Shady Creek may be a magical fairyland of a suburb most of the time, but when the candy runs out on Halloween, the criminal underbelly emerges, at least in my neighborhood. It's chilly and unnaturally quiet. If Abby weren't with me, I would have to drown out the silence with music. It feels like we're the last survivors of a zombie apocalypse, Wonder Woman and a gay dementor. It doesn't bode well for the survival of the species. We turn at the end of Nick Street. I could do this walk with my eyes closed. All right, I have something to ask you, Abby says. Oh, yeah? So Martin was talking to me when you were in the bathroom. I feel something freeze up inside of me. Okay, I say. Yeah, and this is... Maybe I'm reading this wrong, but he was talking about homecoming, and he brought it up like 3 times. Did he ask you to the dance? No, it was like, I guess it seemed like he was maybe trying to. Martin freaking Addison. He's like the opposite of suave. But holy fuck, I'm so relieved he didn't tell her. I'm guessing he didn't get anywhere with that. Abby bites her lip and smiles. He's a really nice guy. Yep. But I'm already going with Ty Allen. He asked me 2 weeks ago. Really? How did I not know that? Sorry, was I supposed to announce it on the Tumblr? She grins. Anyway, I don't know if you might be able to mention that to Martin. You're friends with him, right? I'd just rather not deal with him asking me if I can avoid it. I'll see what I can do. What about you? Are you still boycotting? Abby asks. Of course. Leah, Nick, and I are of the mind that homecoming is just achingly lame, and we skip it every year. You could ask Leah, Abby says. She looks at me sidelong, with a weird probing expression. I feel a storm of laughter brewing. You think I like Leah? I don't know, she says, smiling and shrugging. You look so sweet together tonight. Me and Leah? I ask. But I'm gay. 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 God, I should really just tell her. I can kind of picture her reaction. Eyes widening, mouth falling open. Yeah, maybe not tonight. Hey, I say, not quite looking at her. Do you think you would ever be into Martin? Martin Addison? Why do you ask? Nothing. I don't know. He's a decent guy, I guess. My voice sounds thin and high, like Voldemort. I can't believe I'm doing this. Huh? It's cute that you guys are friends. I don't even know what to say to that. My mom is waiting for us in the kitchen when we walk in, and it's time to brace myself. The thing about my mom is she's a child psychologist, and it shows. So tell me about the party, guys. Here we go. It was awesome, Mom. Good thing Garrett had so much booze. I mean, really. Abby is better at this than I am. She launches into a really detailed description of everyone's costumes, while my mom brings over this epic plate of snacks from the counter. My parents are usually in bed by 10, and I can tell my mom is exhausted. But I knew she'd be awake when we got home. She seriously lives for opportunities to be a hey-guys-I'm-cool kind of mom. And Nick played guitar, Abby says. Nick's very talented, says my mom. Oh, I know, Abby replies. Girls were, like, swooning over him. That's why I keep telling Simon to learn guitar. His sister used to play. I'm going to bed, I say. Abby, are you good? My mom has Abby staying in Alice's room, which is hilarious considering Nick has been spending the night on my bedroom floor for about 10 years. It isn't until I'm in my room that I can finally relax. Bieber is already passed out at the foot of my bed in a nest of jeans and hoodies. My Dementor robes end up in a heap on the floor. I did aim for the hamper. I'm kind of comically unathletic. I lie on top of my bed without getting in it. I hate messing up the sheets before I absolutely have to. I know this is weird, but I make my bed every single day, even though the rest of my room is a hellscape of paper and laundry and books and clutter. Sometimes I feel like my bed is a lifeboat. I put in my earbuds. Nora and I share a wall, so I'm not supposed to listen to anything through the speakers after she goes to bed. I need something familiar. Elliot Smith. I'm wide awake and still kind of electrified from the party. I think it was good. I don't have a lot to compare it to. It's a little bit crazy to think that I had a beer. I know it's astonishingly lame to even think that about a single beer. Garrett and all the soccer guys probably think it's crazy to stop at one. But they're not me. I don't think I'll tell my parents about it. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't get in trouble if I did. I don't know. I need to spend some time in my head with this new Simon. My parents have a way of ruining things like this. They get so curious. It's like they have this idea of me, and whenever I step outside of that, it blows their minds. There's something so embarrassing about that in a way that I can't even describe. I mean, telling my parents was easily the weirdest, most horrible thing about having a girlfriend. All 3 times. It was honestly worse than any of the breakups. I'll never forget the day I told them about my 8th grade girlfriend, Rachel Thomas. Oh my God. First, they wanted to see her yearbook picture. My dad actually brought the yearbook into the kitchen where the light is better, and he was perfectly silent for a full minute, and then... That girl has some eyebrows. I mean, I hadn't noticed until he said it, but after that it was kind of all I could think about. My mom was the one who got obsessed with the idea that I had a girlfriend, even though I had never had one before. I don't know why that came as such a freaking surprise to her, since I'm pretty sure most people start out never having had one. But yeah. And she wanted to know everything. How Rachel and I got together, and what my feelings were, and whether we needed her to drive us anywhere. She was just so bizarrely interested in all of it. It didn't help that my sisters never talk about boys or dating, so it was like a huge spotlight on me. Honestly, the weirdest part is how they made it feel like this big coming out moment, which can't be normal. As far as I know, coming out isn't something that straight kids generally worry about. That's the thing people wouldn't understand. This coming out thing. It's not even about me being gay, because I know deep down that my family would be fine with it. We're not religious. My parents are Democrats. My dad likes to joke around, and it would definitely be awkward, but I guess I'm lucky. I know they're not going to disown me. And I'm sure some people in school would give me hell, but my friends would be fine. Leah loves gay guys, so she'd probably be freaking thrilled. But I'm tired of coming out. All I ever do is come out. I try not to change, but I keep changing in all these tiny ways. I get a girlfriend, I have a beer, and every freaking time I have to reintroduce myself to the universe all over again. 6. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, November 1st at 11:12 a.m. Subject, regarding Halloweeners. Jacques, I hope your Halloween was excellent, and that your simplicity and badassery hit the mark. Things were really quiet around here. We only had about 6 trick-or-treaters. Of course, that means I am contractually obligated to eat the leftover Reese's Cups. I can't believe it's already almost homecoming. I'm excited about it. Make no mistake, football is still my least favorite sport, but I actually really like going to the homecoming game. I guess it's something about the lights and the drum beats and the scent of the air. Fall air always smells like possibility. Or maybe I just like ogling the cheerleaders. You know me. Are you doing anything interesting this weekend? We're supposed to have suck nice weather. Excuse me, dick nice weather. Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, November 1st at 5:30 p.m. Subject, Reese's are better than sex. Very funny, Blue. Very funny. Anyway, I'm sorry you got stuck at home last night for only 6 trick-or-treaters. What a waste. Next year, couldn't you just stick the bowl on the porch with a note telling the kids to take 2? Granted, the kids in my neighborhood would have taken candy by the fistful while cackling with villainous laughter, and they probably would have peed on the note for good measure. But maybe the kids in your neighborhood are more civilized. But seriously, leftover Reese's? Is it possible to send chocolate over email these days? Please say it is. My Halloween wasn't bad. I won't say too much about it, but I ended up going to this guy's party. I don't think it was really my scene, but it was definitely interesting. I guess it was nice to step out of my comfort zone. Wait, I didn't just ruin my chance of convincing you I'm a hardcore party ninja, right? So I keep thinking about the idea of secret identities. Do you ever feel locked into yourself? I'm not sure if I'm making sense here. I guess what I mean is that sometimes it seems like everyone knows who I am except me. Okay, I'm glad you mentioned homecoming, because I totally forgot that Spirit Week is this week. Monday is Decades Day, right? I guess I should check online so I can avoid making an ass of myself. Honestly, I can't believe they schedule Spirit Week right after Halloween. Creekwood really blows its load on costume days all at once. How do you think you'll dress up for Monday? I know you're not going to answer that. And I totally figured you'd be ogling the cheerleaders on Friday, because you're all about the ladies. Me too, Blue. Me too. Jacques. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, November 2nd at 1:43 p.m. Subject, regarding Reese's are better than sex. Reese's are better than sex? Admittedly, I wouldn't know, but I have to hope you're wrong about that one. Maybe you should stop having heterosexual sex, Jacques. I'm just saying. The kids in your neighborhood sound really charming. Urine isn't a huge issue here, so maybe next year I'll take your advice. It will probably be moot anyway, because my mom almost never goes out. She just can't keep up with your party ninja ways, Jacques. I completely understand what you mean about feeling locked into yourself. For me, I don't even think it has anything to do with other people thinking they know me. It's more that I want to leap in and say certain things and do certain things, but I always seem to hold myself back. I think a big part of me is afraid. Even thinking about it makes me nauseated. Did I mention I get nauseated easily? Of course, that's the exact reason I don't want to say anything about Spirit Week and costumes. I don't want you to put two and two together and figure out who I am. Whatever it is we're doing here, I don't think it works if we know each other's real identities. I have to admit that it makes me nervous to think of you as someone actually connected with my life, rather than a mostly anonymous person on the internet. Obviously, some of the things I've told you about myself are things I've never talked about with anyone. I don't know, Jacques. There's something about you that makes me want to open up, and that's slightly terrifying for me. I hope this isn't too awkward. I know you were kidding when you asked what costume I was going to wear, but I wanted to put this out there, just in case it wasn't entirely a joke. I have to admit I'm curious about you sometimes, too. Blue. P.S. I'm attaching a Reese's cup to this email. I hope this is what you had in mind. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, November 3rd at 6:37 p.m. Subject, regarding Reese's are better than sex. Blue. I think I made you uncomfortable, and I'm really, really sorry. I'm kind of a nosy person. It's always been a problem. I'm so sorry, Blue. I know I sound like a broken record. I don't know if I've mentioned this outright, but our emails are really important to me. I would never forgive myself if I fucked this up. F'd this up. Sorry, I don't even know if you cuss. So I might have given you the wrong idea with this subject line. I have to admit that I don't technically know whether Reese's are better than sex. Reese's are really freaking incredible, don't get me wrong. And I'm guessing they're better than heterosex, aka intercourse, per my mom. Non-heterosex, though? I imagine it may be a little better than Reese's. Is it weird that I can't talk about this without blushing? Anyway, speaking of Reese's, thank you so much for the photo. That was exactly what I had in mind. Instead of actually eating one, I just wanted to imagine how salty and chocolatey and awesome it would be to eat one. It's great, because I really wanted to torture myself, but I didn't feel like making the effort to Google Reese's cups myself. I would rate our own supply of leftover chocolate, but it didn't even come close to surviving the weekend. Jacques. Partying harder than Blue's mom since 2014. 7. Wednesday is Genderbender Day, which basically amounts to Southern straight people cross-dressing. It's definitely not my favorite. We're watching Twelfth Night in first period, because every English teacher is a comedian. Mr. Weiss has this warped, ratty couch in his classroom that smells a little like beer, and I'm pretty sure people sneak in here to have sex and rub their fluids all over it after school. It's that kind of couch. But we all fight to the death to sit on it during class. I guess because everything's just a million times more bearable when you're not in a desk. Today, it's been taken over by soccer boys in Creekwood cheerleading uniforms. Specifically Nick, Garrett, and Bram. That's generally what the jocks do for Genderbender. There are only about 20 cheerleaders in all, so I have no idea how they meet the demand. Maybe they all have 10 uniforms each. Who the hell knows what this school spends its money on? But I have to admit that there's something kind of awesome about soccer calves and scuffed tennis shoes coming out of pleated cheerleading skirts. I can't believe Bram Greenfeld dressed up. Bram from my lunch table. He's this quiet black kid who's supposed to be really smart, but I've never heard him speak unless he's forced to. He leans way back into the corner of the couch, shuffling the toe of one foot against the other, and I never noticed it before, but he's actually kind of adorable. Mr. Wise has already started the movie when Abby charges into the room. Between cheerleading, the play, and all of her committees, there's always a reason for Abby to be late to first period, but she never gets called out. It really pisses Leah off, especially because the people on the couch always seem to be willing to scoot over to make room for Abby. She takes one look at the lineup on the couch and bursts out laughing, and Nick looks so ridiculously pleased with himself. The expression on his face is exactly the same as the day he found a dinosaur bone buried beneath the elementary school playground. I mean, it turned out to be a chicken bone, but still. "What the heck?" Abby says, sliding into the desk behind me. She's wearing a full suit and tie, and this long Dumbledorean fake beard. "You guys didn't dress up." "I'm wearing hair clips," I point out. "Okay, well, they're invisible," she turns to Leah. "And you're in a dress?" Leah looks at her and shrugs without explaining. Dressing extra feminine for gender bender is just something Leah does. It's her way of being subversive. So here's the thing. I would have left the godforsaken industrial-strength hair clips in Alice's drawer where I found them if I thought I could get away with it. But everyone knows I participate in this kind of crap. Ironically, of course. But still, it would be weirdly conspicuous if I didn't cross-dress at least a little bit today. It's funny how it ends up being the straightest, preppiest, most athletic guys who go all out for genderbender. I guess they feel secure enough in their masculinity that they don't care. I actually hate when people say that. I mean, I feel secure in my masculinity, too. Being secure in your masculinity isn't the same as being straight. I guess the one thing that's weird for me is dressing like a girl. What no one knows, even Blue, is that dressing up used to mean something to me. I don't know how to explain it or reconcile it, but I haven't forgotten the feeling of silk and air against my legs. I always knew I was a boy, and I've never wanted to be anything but a boy. But when I was younger, I used to wake up at night in April dreaming of Halloween. I would try my costume on a dozen times each October, and all through November I obsessively fantasized about pulling it out of my closet one more time. But I never crossed that line. I don't know. There's just something kind of mortifying to me about the intensity of those feelings. I remember them so clearly. I can't even stomach the idea of cross-dressing now. I don't even like to think about it too much. But a lot of the time, I can't believe that was me. The classroom door opens, and there stands Martin Addison, framed by the bright light of the hallway. He managed to find a cheerleading uniform, and he even went to the trouble of stuffing his chest with weirdly realistic boobs. Martin's really tall, so the amount of his skin on display is actually pretty obscene. Someone in the back row whistles, "Looking hot, Adderall!" "Late pass, Mr. Addison," says Mr. Wise. And maybe it's just Leah getting into my head, but I can't help but think it's unfair that Abby didn't have to get one. Martin stretches his arms up against the frame of the doorway, like he's hanging from monkey bars, and the top of his uniform rides up even higher. Some of the girls giggle a little bit, and Martin grins and blushes. I swear to God, that kid will whore himself out completely for a cheap laugh. But I guess he's kind of a genius for that, because I've never met a nerd so beloved by the popular kids. I mean, I'm not going to lie. They kind of live to tease him, but there's no bite to it. It's like he's their mascot. "Any day, Mr. Addison," says Mr. Wise. He tugs his top down, pushes his boobs back into position, and walks out of the room. On Friday, the math and science hallway is covered in hay. It's probably 3 inches thick under my feet, and a few strands of it jut out stiffly from the slats of my locker. Dust seems to rise off the ground, and even the light looks different. The theme this year is music, and out of every genre in the world, the junior class picked country. Only in Georgia. Which is why I'm wearing a bandana and a cowboy hat. School freaking spirit. Okay, so homecoming sucks and country music is just embarrassing, but I'm in love with the hay. Even though it means Anna and Taylor Metternich and all the other asthmatics will have to skip science and math today. It just transforms everything. The hall looks like another universe. When I get to lunch, I seriously almost lose my shit. It's the freshmen. They're adorable and ridiculous, and oh my god, I can't stop laughing at them. Their genre is emo, and it's basically a sea of bangs and wristbands and tears. I begged Nora last night to show up in a black wig, eyeliner, and for the love of God, at least a My Chemical Romance shirt. She basically looked at me like I had suggested she show up naked. I catch a glimpse of her now across the cafeteria, and her curly blonde hair is really the opposite of emo. But it looks like she talked herself into the raccoon eyeliner, probably once she saw everyone else doing it. She's a perfect chameleon. It's hard to believe this is the same person who once insisted on dressing up as a trash can. Martin's at the table right next to ours, and he's wearing overalls. Seriously, he owns overalls. He tries to catch my eye, but I look away abruptly. Avoiding Martin is like a reflex for me at this point. I take a seat between Leah and Garrett, who carry on arguing right over me. "Who the hell is that?" asks Leah. "You seriously haven't heard of Jason Aldean?" says Garrett. "I seriously haven't." Garrett slaps his hand down on the table, so I slap my hands down to imitate him, and he shoots me a self-conscious smile. "Hey," says Nick, settling into the seat across from me and opening his lunch bag. "So I have a thought," he says. "I think we should go to the game tonight." "You're kidding me," says Leah. Nick looks at her. "What about Waho?" she says. "We always hang out at Waffle House during football games." "What about it?" asks Nick. Leah's head is tilted down, so her eyes look kind of scary, and her lips are sucked into a straight line. Everyone is quiet for a moment. And maybe my timing sucks here, but I guess I'm not really thinking about Leah. "I'll go to the game," I say, because I'm pretty sure Blue will be at the game. I like the idea of sitting in the same bleachers as Blue. "Seriously?" Leah says. I feel her eyes on me, though I make a point to look straight ahead. "A2, Brute?"
"Holy overreaction, Batman," Nick starts to say.
"You shut up." Leah cuts him off. Garrett laughs nervously. "Did I miss something?" Abby arrives to find us caught in this thick, weird silence. She sits down next to Nick. "Is everything okay?"
"Yeah, everything's fine."
Nick glances at her, and his cheeks look sort of pink.
"Okay,"
she says and grins. Abby isn't wearing a cowboy hat. She's wearing a full-on stack of cowboy hats. "So are you guys psyched for the game tonight?" Leah stands abruptly, pushes her chair in, and leaves without a word. The game starts at 7, but there's a parade at 6. I walk over to Nick's house after school, and we drive back to school together. "So we're on Leah's shit list," I say, as we turn onto the road leading to Creekwood. Already, cars are parallel parked on the street, which has to mean the parking lot is full. I guess a lot of people like football.
"She'll get over it," he says. "Is that a space?"
"No, it's a hydrant."
"Crap, okay. Jeez, it's crowded."
I think it's the first time Nick has been here for a football game. It's definitely the first time for me. It takes another 10 minutes to find a spot that Nick can pull up into from behind, because he hates parallel parking. In the end, we have to walk about 1,000,000 miles through the rain to get to the school, but I guess those cowboy hats are good for something after all. It's really the first time I've ever noticed the stadium lights. I mean, they've always been there, and I've probably seen them turned on before. I never realized how incredibly bright they are. Blue loves them. I wonder if he's already a part of the mass of people milling around the field. We pay a couple of dollars, and they give us tickets, and then we're in. The marching band plays a weirdly awesome medley of Beyoncé songs and does this stiff little dance in the stands. And really, despite the rain and the fact that it's homecoming, I think I understand why Blue loves this. It feels like anything could happen.
"There you are,"
says Abby, jogging toward us. She gives us each a giant hug.
"I just texted both of you. Do you guys want to walk in the parade?"
Nick and I look at each other.
"Okay,"
I say. Nick shrugs. We end up following Abby to the teacher parking lot, where a bunch of student council people have assembled around the junior class float. It's built onto a flatbed trailer with a frame constructed up the back, and it definitely looks like country music. There are bales of hay lining the entire surface of the trailer, stacked up higher along the back, and red bandanas knotted together like streamers all around the border of the frame. Everything is lined with Christmas lights. Twangy pop country music blasts through someone's iPod speakers. Abby's in the thick of it, of course. She'll be riding the float with some of the other cheerleaders, wearing short denim skirts and flannel shirts knotted up to show their midriffs. There are a couple of guys in overalls, including one dude sitting against the hay bales pretending to play an acoustic guitar. I have to grin at Nick, because nothing pisses him off more than someone faking on the guitar. Especially someone who can't even be bothered to move his fingers along the frets. This girl Maddie from student council lines us up behind the float and rows, and then someone passes down pieces of straw for us to hold in our teeth. "And y'all have to chant," Maddie says, looking deadly serious. "They're judging us on spirit."
"God, juniors,"
I mutter to Nick, who snorts. There's only so much you can do with a piece of straw clamped between your teeth. Maddie looks panicked. "Oh my God, everyone, okay, change of plans. No straw. Everyone take out the straw. Okay, good. Be loud, y'all. Remember to smile." The float starts moving around the parking lot, where it falls into place behind some kind of rock and roll monstrosity the sophomores have put together. We follow behind it, taking our cue from Maddie, who calls up cheers and randomly yells, "Woohoo!" when things get too quiet. The parade actually leaves the school grounds, where it loops around for a block before coming onto the track circling the football field. The lights shine down on us, and people cheer. And I can't believe Nick and I ended up in the middle of this. It's so Johnny High School. I feel like I'm supposed to make some comment to underscore the ridiculousness of it all, but honestly, it's sort of nice not to have to be cynical for a change. I guess it feels like I'm part of something. Abby and the other cheerleaders rush off to the bathroom as soon as the parade's end to get into their uniforms, and Nick and I look up at the bleachers. The faces blur together, and it's hard to find anyone we recognize. It's a little overwhelming. "Soccer team's up there," Nick says finally, pointing up to the left and a few rows down from the top. I follow him up the concrete stairs, and then we end up having to squeeze past people to get over to them. God, just when you think you've discovered every kind of awkwardness there is. And then comes the issue of finding a place to actually sit. Garrett pushes in closer to Bram to make room, but I'm still basically sitting on Nick's lap, and that sure as hell isn't going to work. I stand up again immediately, feeling twitchy and self-conscious. "Okay," I say, "I'm going to go sit with drama club people." I spot Taylor's bright blonde, super-brushed hair a couple rows ahead of us next to the stairs, and she's sitting with Emily Goff and a couple of the others. A couple of the others, including Kyle Price. My heart beats faster. I knew Kyle would be here. I squeeze through my row and back down the stairs, feeling like every eye in the stadium is on me. Then I reach under the banister to tap Cal on the shoulder. "What's up, Simon?" he says. I like that he calls me Simon. A lot of the guys call me Spear, and I don't mind that. But I don't know. Honestly, I think I would like whatever Cal Price called me. "Hey," I say. "Can I join you guys?"
"Definitely."
He scoots over a few feet. "Plenty of room." And there is. I won't have to sit on his lap anyway. It's actually kind of unfortunate. I spend a full minute trying to think of something to say. My brain feels foggy. "I don't think I've ever seen you at a game," Cal says, pushing his bangs out of his eyes. And seriously, I can't even, because Cal's bangs, Cal's eyes, the fact that he apparently notices me enough to know I'm not at football games. "This is my first time," I say, because I just have to say the most virgin-y thing ever. "That's cool." And he's so calm. He's not even facing me, because he can talk and watch the game at the same time. "I like coming when I can. I try to make it to homecoming, at least." I try to think of a way to ask the thing I can ask him. Maybe if I mentioned something about the smell of the air, just to see how he would react. But if I said that and Cal really is blue, he'd know immediately that Jock is me. And I don't think I'm ready for that. I'm so freaking ridiculously, absurdly curious, though.
Hey.
Suddenly, someone slides in next to me on the bleacher. It's Martin. I scoot down automatically to make room.
Adderall,
some guy behind us grunts, messing up Martin's hair. Martin grins up at him. Then he smooths his hair back down, or tries to, and chews his lip for a minute.
What's up, Spear?
Nothing, I say, and my heart sinks. He turns his body toward mine, and he's clearly in the mood for a conversation. So much for talking to Cal. So much for the air smelling like possibility.
Hey, so this Abby thing?
Yeah?
I asked her to the dance,
he says super quietly,
and she shot me down.
Okay, sorry. That sucks.
Did you know she already had a date?
Yeah, I think I did know that. Sorry, I say again. I probably should have gotten around to speaking to Martin about that.
Could you give me a heads up next time?
He asks.
So I don't embarrass myself?
He looks so miserable. I feel weirdly guilty. Even though he's blackmailing me, I feel guilty. So that's a little fucked up. I don't think they're like boyfriend-girlfriend, I say.
Whatever, he says. I look at him.
I don't know if he's giving up on Abby or what. And if he does give up on her, what happens to the emails? Maybe he gets to hold them over my head forever. I actually can't think of anything worse than that. 8. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, November 11th at 11:45 p.m. Subject, regarding all of the above. Blue. Okay, first of all, Oreos absolutely qualify as a food group. Second of all, they're the only food group that matters. My sisters and I actually made up this place called the Shoreo a few years ago, one night when we were staying at our aunt's house. It's like this place where everything is made up of some kind of Oreo. And the river is an Oreo milkshake, and you sit on top of this massive Oreo and float down it. You get to scoop up cups of milkshake whenever you want. It's kind of like that scene in Willy Wonka, I guess. Who the hell knows what we were thinking? We were probably just hungry that night. My aunt is a really shitty cook. Anyway, I forgive you for your ignorance. I know you didn't realize you were talking to an expert. Jacques. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, November 12th at 5:37 p.m. Subject, regarding all of the above. Jacques. It's true. I had no idea I was talking to such an Oreo connoisseur. The Shoreo sounds like a magical place. So, Doctor, how many servings of Oreo products are necessary for a balanced diet? I'm getting the impression that you have a bit of a sweet tooth. Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, November 13th at 7:55 p.m. Subject, sweet tooth? I can't imagine why you'd think that. All right. I have a sneaking suspicion that you're not 100% committed to your Oreo diet. The guidelines are really pretty basic. No excuses. Breakfast is obviously an Oreo granola bar or Oreo Pop-Tart. No, they're not gross. Shut up. They're amazing. Lunch should be Oreo pizza with an Oreo milkshake and a couple of those Oreo truffles my mom makes, aka the most delicious freaking things in the universe. Dinner is deep-fried Oreos served on top of Oreo ice cream. And for a drink, it's Oreos dissolved in milk. No water. Only Oreo milk. Dessert can be Oreos straight up. Sound reasonable? It's for your health, Blue. I swear to God, typing this is actually making me hungry. This totally used to happen to me when I was younger. Isn't it funny the way you fantasize about junk food when you're a kid? It's really all-consuming. I guess you have to obsess about something before you know about sex. Dr. Jacques. From bluegreen118 at gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, November 14th at 10:57 p.m. Subject, regarding sweet tooth. Jacques. I really appreciate you looking out for my health. It will be hard, but I know my body will thank me. Seriously, I can't argue with the fact that Oreos are extremely delicious, and the menu you described actually sounds amazing. Although for me, I'll have to leave out the deep-fried Oreo dinner. I made the mistake of eating one once at a carnival right before going on the Tilt-A-Whirl. I'll spare you the details, but let it be said that people who get nauseated easily have no business riding the Tilt-A-Whirl. I haven't been able to look at deep-fried Oreos the same way since. Sorry to even have to tell you that. I know Oreos are really important to you. I have to admit I like to imagine you as a kid fantasizing about junk food. I also like to imagine you now fantasizing about sex. I can't believe I just wrote that. I can't believe I'm hitting send. Blue. 9. He likes to imagine me fantasizing about sex. That's something I probably shouldn't have read right before bed. I lie here in the pitch darkness, reading that particular line on my phone again and again. I'm jittery and awake, and completely in knots, all from an email. And I'm hard, so that's kind of strange. It's really confusing, a good kind of confusing. Blue is normally so careful about what he writes. He likes to imagine me fantasizing about sex. I thought I was the only one who had those kinds of thoughts about us. I wonder what it would be like to meet him in person, after all this time. Would we even have to speak? Would we go straight into making out? I think I can picture it. He's in my bedroom, and we're totally alone. He sits beside me on the bed and turns to look at me with his blue-green eyes. Cal Price's eyes. And then his hands cut my face, and all of a sudden he's kissing me. My hands cut my face. Well, my left hand cups my face. My right hand is occupied. I picture it. He kisses me, and it's nothing like Rachel or Anna or Karis. I can't even. It's not even in the same stratosphere. There's this electric, tingly feeling radiating through my whole body, and my brain has gone fuzzy, and I actually think I can hear my heartbeat. I have to be so, so quiet. Nora's on the other side of the wall. His tongue is in my mouth. His hands slide up under my shirt, and he trails his fingers across my chest. I'm so close. It's almost unbearable. God. Blue. My whole body turns to jelly. On Monday, Leah intercepts me as I walk into school. Hey, she says. Nora, I'm stealing him. What's up? I ask. The ground slopes, and there's this concrete ledge that curves around the courtyard. Parts of it are just low enough to the ground that it makes a kind of shelf for your butt. Leah avoids my eyes. I made you a mix, she says, handing me a CD in a clear plastic case. You can load it onto your iPod when you get home. Whatever. I turn the case over in my hands. Instead of a track list, Leah has composed what appears to be a haiku. Wrinkled neck, gray hair. Sorry to say this, Simon, but you're fucking old. Leah, it's so beautiful. Yeah, okay. She scoots backward on the ledge and leans back on her hands, looking at me. All right. Are we cool? I nod. You mean about you guys ditching me on homecoming? I'm really sorry, Leah. The edges of her mouth tug up. You're so freaking lucky it's your birthday. And then she pulls a cone-shaped party hat out of her bag and straps it onto my head. Sorry if I overreacted, she adds. There's a massive sheet cake at lunch, and when I get to the table, everyone is wearing party hats. That's the tradition. No one gets cake without the hat. Garrett seems to be gunning for two pieces, actually. He's got a pair of cones strapped onto his head like horns.
"Simon," Abby says, except she actually sings it in this low, husky opera voice.
Hands out, eyes closed. I feel something nearly weightless drop onto my palm. I open my eyes, and it's a piece of paper folded into a bow tie and colored in with a gold crayon. A couple of people from other tables look at us, and I feel myself grinning and blushing. Should I wear it?
Yeah, she says. You have to. Golden bow tie for your golden birthday.
My what?
Your golden birthday. 17 on the 17th, Abby says.
Then she tilts her chin up dramatically and extends her hand.
Nicholas, the tape.
Nick has been holding three pieces of scotch tape on the ends of his fingertips for who knows how long. Honest to God, he's like her little pet monkey. Abby tapes on my bow tie and pokes my cheeks, which is something she does weirdly often because apparently my cheeks are adorable. Whatever the heck that means.
So whenever you're ready, Leah says.
She's holding a plastic knife and a stack of plates, and she seems to be making a point of not looking at Nick or Abby.
So ready.
Leah slices it into perfect little squares, and seriously, it's like waves of magical deliciousness have shot into the atmosphere. Guess which table of AP nerds have somehow become the most popular kids in school?
No hat, no cake. Morgan and Anna lay down the law from the other end of the table.
A couple of kids tape pieces of loose leaf paper into cone hats, and one dude manages to wedge a brown paper lunch bag on his head like a chef's hat. People are shameless when it comes to cake. It's a beautiful thing to see.
The cake itself is so perfect that I know Leah picked it out. Half chocolate and half vanilla, because I can never commit to a favorite, and covered in that weirdly delicious Publix icing, and no red icing. Leah knows I think it tastes too red. Leah's really amazing at birthdays. I bring the leftovers to rehearsal, and Ms. Albright lets us have a cake picnic on the stage. And by cake picnic, I mean drama kids hunched over the box like vultures shoveling cake by the fistful.
"Oh my God, I think I just gained 5 pounds, says Amy Everett.
"Aw," says Taylor. "I guess I'm lucky I have a really fast metabolism."
Seriously, that's Taylor. I mean, even I know people can justifiably kill you for saying stuff like that. And speaking of cake-related casualties, Martin Addison is sprawled out on the stage with his face in the empty cake box. Ms. Albright steps over him.
"All right, guys. Hop to it, pencils out. I want you writing this stuff down in your scripts."
I don't mind the writing. The scene we're blocking takes place in a tavern, and I'm basically just making notes reminding myself to act drunk. It's kind of too bad these aren't the notes we'll be tested on for our finals. That would really improve some people's grades. We push through without a break today, but I'm not in every scene, so I actually have quite a bit of downtime. There are risers pushed to the side of the stage, left over from a choir concert. I sit near the bottom and rest my elbows on top of my knees. Sometimes I forget how nice it is to just sit back and watch things. Martin is standing downstage left, telling a story to Abby and using lots of twitchy gestures. She's shaking her head and laughing. So maybe Martin hasn't given up after all. And suddenly Cal Price is standing in front of me, nudging my foot with the toe of his sneaker.
"Hey," he says. "Happy birthday."
This is a happy birthday. He sits beside me on the riser, a foot or so away.
"Doing anything to celebrate?"
"Oh, okay. I don't want to lie, but I don't exactly want him to know that my plans consist of hanging out with my family and reading birthday messages on Facebook. It's a Monday, right? I'm not actually expected to do anything cool on a Monday."
"Yeah, I guess so," I say finally. "I think we're having ice cream cake."
"Oreo," I add. I just have to put the Oreo thing out there.
"That's cool," he says. "Hope you saved room for it."
No discernible reaction to the Oreos, but I guess that doesn't have to mean anything.
"Okay, well," Cal says, scooting forward.
I will him not to stand up. He stands up. Enjoy it. But then he puts his hand on my shoulder for the briefest fraction of a second. I almost don't believe it happened. I mean, I'm dead serious. Birthdays are fucking amazing. 10. From hour-to-hour dot note to note at gmail.com to bluegreen118 at gmail.com. Date, November 18th at 4:15 a.m. Subject, why? Oh my God, Blue, I'm so tired, my face hurts. Do you ever have those random nights where your brain won't shut off, even though your body feels like 500 pounds of exhausted? I'm just going to email you, and I hope that's okay, and I know this is probably going to be totally incoherent, so you can't judge me, okay? Even if I fuck up my grammar. You're like the best writer, Blue, and normally I try to check everything like 3 times because I don't want to disappoint you. So sorry in advance for all the wreckage with your, there, and everything else. Today has been pretty freaking great, actually. I'm trying not to think about what a zombie I'll be tomorrow. Of course, I have 5 quizzes in the next 2 days, including one in un ultra long that I suck at completement. Le fuck. So, didn't there used to be a reality show where people had to date each other in pitch darkness? We should do that. We should find a room somewhere that's totally dark, and then we could hang out and it would be totally anonymous. That way we wouldn't ruin anything. What do you think? Shock. From bluegreen118 at gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote at gmail.com. Date, November 18th at 7:15 a.m. Subject, regarding, why? Zombie Jacques. I don't know what to say. On one hand, I'm sorry you're pretty much guaranteed a shitty day today. And I really hope you were able to squeeze in at least an hour or two of sleep. On the other hand, you're pretty cute when you're exhausted. And by the way, you were very coherent and grammatical for 4 in the morning. Hang in there today with the quizzes, though, and just power through. Bonne chance, Jacques. I'm rooting for you. I have absolutely never heard of that show. I guess I don't know all that much about reality TV. It's an interesting concept, but how would we keep from recognizing each other's voices? Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote at gmail.com to bluegreen118 at gmail.com. Date, November 18th at 7:32 p.m. Subject, regarding why? So I'm a little scared to read what I wrote to you last night. I'm glad I was cute and grammatical. I think you're cute and grammatical, too. Anyway, I don't know what the hell that was all about. Too much sugar yesterday, I guess. Sorry. Yeah, I'm still so totally brain dead. I don't even want to think about how I did on my quizzes. Don't know much about reality TV? You mean your parents don't make you watch it? Because mine do. And I bet you think I'm kidding. You bring up a good point about our voices. I guess we would have to use some kind of robotic megaphone to warp them so they sound like Darth Vader. Or we could just do other things instead of talking. I mean, I'm just saying. Your zombie Jacques. 11. It's the day after Thanksgiving, and Alice is home, and we're on the back porch after dinner. It's actually warm enough for hoodies and pajama pants and leftover ice cream cake and scattergories. All right, famous duos and trios. Abbott and Costello, says my mom. Nora and I both say Adam and Eve. It's a little surprising, considering we're probably the only family in the South without a Bible. The Axis Powers, says my dad. And you can tell he's so proud of that one. Alice and the Chipmunks, says Alice casually. And all of us just lose it. I don't know. The Chipmunks are kind of our thing. We had the voices perfected and the theme song choreographed, and we used to do these performances on the ledge in front of the fireplace. It seriously went on for years. Our lucky parents. though they're the ones who named us Alice, Simon, and Eleanor, which means they were basically asking for it. Alice rubs Bieber's back with her feet, and her socks don't match, and it's almost impossible to believe that this is the first time she's been home.